Our next speaker is Dr. Richard C. Cabot. Dr. Cabot received 4 degrees, including a PhD from Rensselaer Polytechnical Institute, where his research topic was sound localization in multi-channel audio. After 6 years in engineering at Tektronix, he co-founded Audio Precision and later served as CTO until selling the company in 2000. Upon leaving Audio Precision in 2001 and completing an MBA at Pepperdine University, he started XFRM Incorporated, a research and consulting firm in digital audio technology. After working on some home theater products, he settled on digital audio for broadcast, developing the Qualys Audio Sentinel. He is a member or fellow of numerous technical societies and served as AES president. Dr. Cabot has authored and presented numerous papers on audio. He currently holds 17 U.S. patents, and with the government shutdown, he's still waiting on 6 others that are still pending. As soon as we get all connected here, you can hear from Dr. Richard Cabot.
Okay. I'm going to talk about making and monitoring of surround, primarily for TV broadcast, because you guys are essentially TV. And one of the issues that comes up immediately with audio for TV is that the surround penetration is still relatively small in U.S. homes. Although you'll see numbers that are as high as 39-40% penetration, what that means is that that many households have a surround set, surround compatible set, somewhere in the house. Doesn't mean that's what they're watching all of the time. Typical home may have a surround system in the family room, but there's a stereo TV in the kitchen, in bedrooms. They might have tablet PCs that they use for watching content. And so you've got to be conscious of not just how your audio is going to be perceived in surround, but also in stereo. And I'll talk some about COMACT, and although that doesn't apply to some classes of stations, it applies widely enough that it's a major concern. Technical issues around loudness are that it's typically measured in surround, but if you measure it in stereo, you can get different numbers. So the two are not the same. Mixing to a loudness target in real time has a set of problems, which I'll talk about. And then something that we refer to as dialogue balance, which is the loudness of the dialogue in your content relative to everything else in your content. And then how the entire program downmixes to stereo, issues that come up there. Because, again, a good chunk of your audience is not going to be hearing it in surround. Now, when we talk about audio quality management, this is an issue all through your chain, whether it's content production, post-production, ingest, QC, transmission, off-air monitoring, or what we refer to as forensics, which is if you broadcast something and you get a complaint later, you want to be able to go back and see what happened, understand what went wrong that led to that complaint. And then something large organizations often pay attention to, but really should be in any size organization, is the idea of process control and improvement, that when something goes wrong, you've got a system in place to feed the information about that backwards up the chain so that it cannot happen again, reduce the chance that it happens again. So if we look at loudness measurement, this is the basics of what modern loudness measurement, how it's achieved. And it's done with filters that simulate the human hearing system. Let's see if my pointer shows up here. I guess you can see the arrow a little bit. This thing called a K filter is a filter that simulates the response of the human ear. Rolls off at low frequencies, does a little bit of shelving at high frequencies. It's not a great representation of human hearing, but it's a reasonable approximation, good enough to get some decent estimates of loudness. Then the output of that filter is run through a mean square detector, something that measures power. And then there's some gain correction applied based on which channel you're monitoring, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go on. But the idea is that surround channels, because the speakers are almost directly at the sides of the ears, tend to be perceived a little bit louder than channels are in front of the listener. Because of head shadowing, the front channels are a little bit less sensitive than the side channels. They come out a little bit louder. So the standard that's used, the international standard, which is also what's referenced by the FCC with the ATSC standard, is that the surround channels are boosted by 1.5 dB. And then these powers are added together and averaged over time. And then there are ways that this average is done that differ based on how you're processing the content, but basically it's averaged over time so that you get a single number for a commercial or a single number for a program that you're broadcasting, because the loudness is averaged over the program. Now, there are implementation issues in content creation or at ingest where you need to see what the loudness is and adjust it either as you're creating content or if the content's been created, then run it through with an overall adjustment for loudness to boost the overall loudness for the entire program up or down as needed to be compliant. When you're emitting a stream, it's already been produced and you're in a position of monitoring and see what it is, if it's compliant, then you need a way of controlling the measurement to be able to stop and start at beginning and end of your commercials or beginning and end of your program pieces, so you can know what that particular commercial or that program piece was. And then, as I mentioned, establish a feedback system to send the information back up the chain so that if you've got content coming in and there are issues with it, you can feed it back to the content creator and say, hey, here's what we found in this material you submitted to us. If you're at the point in your chain where you're monitoring what's going out to your ultimate viewer, then what you measure gets used internally to say, how did this piece of content get through, or how did it end up non-compliant, if it was non-compliant. And that brings up the idea of running automated as run reports, where you'll run it once a day, typically, and look at your content for the previous broadcast day. We have customers that run these at 6 in the morning to look at everything from the previous 24 hours, and then that report is available to management every morning when they come in. So here's an example of that kind of a report where the top of the report has a summary of what was transmitted for that day. There's numeric results in the list. We've got content that's divided out by whether it's a program or a commercial. And we also identify things that are subunits of an overall program. So in this report that you're looking at here, the program material is in a white background. The commercials are in a gray background. And then we have things which are components of an overall program. So the material between commercial breaks, we also provide measurements for, and that's shown here indented. And over on the right-hand side, we've got graphical icons that give you an idea of whether the content was above or below the target loudness, and then the summary up at the top gives you a summary of what was above and below target loudness. So here's a report for an entire day, shows all content, whether it was within limits or not. So this ends up being typically a 10, 15 page report for most stations. That's a lot to look through, and I'll show you some details on that later. Here's where we've added other information to it, for example, peak levels in the program. So we have loudness, we've got another column for true peak levels. So here's a example of variance-only reports, so there are only two things that failed that broadcast day. So we've got the content that failed. It was, in this case, both, there are both programs, not any commercials. And then we've got the four sub-pieces of the program and the four sub-pieces of this program. So you can see what the overall measurement was for the program, and this is what matters ultimately for the loudness of that program. But then you can see how the program varied through the four pieces that made up that program. And again, here's the summary, which shows what programs passed or failed, and we had two that were above target. Now, I mentioned that there's an issue when you downmix surround content to stereo. You don't necessarily get the same loudness. And there are a couple reasons why that can happen. And actually, the different reasons work against each other. So you can have some portions of a program end up louder than they're supposed to be, and some end up softer than they're supposed to be. That may or may not average out to produce something correct. So the first issue is that the standard boosts the levels of the surround channels by 1.5 dB when they're measured. So if you've got content that's very heavy in the surrounds, you're going to end up with the surround loudness being louder than that same content heard in stereo. Because when you downmix the surrounds into the fronts to make a stereo mix, and that's automatically done in the set-top box, it's not something you're doing in the station, you broadcast the surround mix, the set-top box is set to reproduce it in stereo, so it folds those channels down into a left and a right. When it does that, the default is to take the surrounds, attenuate them by 3 dB before adding them into the left and right front. Now that attenuation that's applied is actually something that's under your control through the Dolby metadata, but the default position for the encoders is a 3 dB reduction. Metadata says drop the surrounds 3 dB when they're downmixed. There are also settings that let you drop them 4.5 dB or 6 dB or leave them out entirely. You've got control over what level they're downmixed, but typically it's a 3 dB attenuation when they're downmixed. So the result is if you've got heavy surround content in your program, somebody hears it in surround, the loudness meter is going to say, okay, that surround content gets boosted by 1.5 dB when we measure it. Somebody hears it in stereo, that surround content is attenuated by 3 dB when it's measured. So there's a 4.5 dB difference between the surround presentation and the stereo presentation if there's a lot of surround content, a lot of stuff in the surrounds. And the difference is in favor of the surround being louder, the surround presentation being louder. Now there's another problem that comes up which works the opposite way, and that is when you have a downmix occurring, and let's say you've got content in all three speakers across the front, you've got a mix where there's the same material in all three channels across the front. When that's downmixed to stereo, the center channel is split in half and put half into the left and half into the right. Now, if your content is the same in the center as it is in one or both of the left and right channels, then you've got coherent content, which means that when it's added together, it's going to add in a vector sense. You've got two voltages, two sine waves that are sine waves if you will, but whatever the audio signals are, if they're in phase, they're going to add and reinforce each other. And because loudness is a power measurement, you've got a situation where when you measure it in surround, let's say you have a level of 1 volt, for example, in each of your channels, you square that, you're still going to have 1, so now your power is 1. You add these together, and if you're adding two channels together, 1 plus 1 is going to give you 2. However, if you add them first by doing a down mix, you've got two things each at 1, you add them together, they become 2, and now you square it to get a power measurement, and you end up with 4. So you've got a difference right away in the measured loudness of that content when it's downmixed versus when it's measured in surround. And it comes out that the downmixed version will measure louder than the surround version. Now, you can also have issues come up with phase differences between the channels of your content. If you've got material that occurs in multiple channels and they're out of phase, then you get cancellations when they're downmixed. And it gets back to the old days of doing stereo to mono compatibility assessment. You look at it on a Listview pattern on an oscilloscope. If you've got a highly fuzzy ball, or worse yet, something with a diagonal going the wrong way, it means you've got out-of-phase content. When that's down mixed, things cancel and they go away. So here's a graph of the loudness change when something's down mixed as a function of the levels in the center front versus the left front and right front. So if you've got content, for example, an announcer or an actor that appears in the center front channel but also happens to appear in the left and right front channels, this shows what the loudness difference will be measured in surround versus measured in stereo as a function of the loudness, or the level, excuse me, of the content in the left and right front. So you put something in your center front, and then you put it 3 dB down in your left and right front, and you're at this point in the curve, and you find when you downmix it, that you've got a 3 loudness unit boost in loudness. So the stereo presentation will come out 3 loudness units louder on a meter than the surround presentation. And that's a problem because FCC limits give you plus minus 2 loudness units for the range that you have to hit in loudness. And this is often a problem, and this problem comes up quite often in concert mixes, because people that do music mixing traditionally like to have a vocalist spread out across them, and they'll mix the vocalist into the left and right front channels, as well as putting that vocalist in the center front. So when it's down mixed, that concert will come out with a much louder reading than you expect from your measurement in surround. But there are other genres where the same thing can happen, but it's most prevalent in concerts. Now, one approach to dealing with this, one that we include in our gear, is to provide 2 loudness meters continually running, one measuring surround version, one measuring the downmixed version, and then giving you an indication of when those differ. So what we implement is a loudness measurement on the surround program, put that in the loudness display. We do a downmix to stereo, do another loudness measurement, and we put the difference into your loudness display. So you can see right away when you've got a deviation between the surround and the stereo presentation. Just in case you think this isn't a very serious problem, doesn't happen very much, this gives you some real-world data on it. And I've overlaid on that real-world data what the theoretical limits are. This data was actually taken by some folks at CBC, CRC, their research arm. And it was on, I believe, 600 pieces of content, both actual broadcast content and DVDs. They took a mixture of movies and stuff they had broadcast over the air. And what the graph shows, a histogram of the difference in loudness between the surround case and the stereo case, and how many pieces of content measured each way. And you can see most content came out just a little bit louder when it was downmixed compared to the surround case. So it's the downmixed loudness minus the surround loudness. So if the number comes out positive, it means the downmixed version was louder. But there's a non-trivial percentage of the content, and it's something on the order of 5% of the content, that was 2 loudness units or more louder when it was downmixed to stereo. Not so much that comes out the other way. It comes out softer when downmixed to stereo. So the problem comes in that the viewer at home in stereo, who's hearing it in stereo, is going to perceive a particular program as being much louder than you expect it is from your meter sitting there monitoring it in surround. And I mentioned I've got the worst case on here. So this red arrow shows you that if you have surrounds only content, you're going to come out 4.5 loudness units low when you downmix to stereo. If you have the worst case of putting all the right combinations of phased material in your 5 channels, you can get as much as a 3.8 loudness unit boost. So if you put the same content in not only the 3 front channels, but the 2 surround channels, set the relative levels correct, in other words, for your worst case, you'll get up to a 3.8 loudness unit boost. And one of the areas where you have to be on the most lookout for that is in commercials, because an unscrupulous advertiser who wants his commercial to pop out If they know that it's going to be leveled in surround, that you're going to be checking their loudness in surround, setting it so it's minus 24, consistent with everything else that you've got going out, and they know that majority of the people are going to hear it in stereo, then they can muck with their mix so that when it's down mixed to stereo, it comes out 3.8 loudness units louder, which is a big boost. The loudness unit is about the same as the dB. So a 4 dB boost in loudness is enough to make something really pop out. This, just again to give you some real world data on this, this is a concert, Adele Live at the Royal Albert Hall, it's a DVD, and I did a loudness measurement across time on this movie, on this concert, and I'm graphing both the original surround loudness, what you'd find with a standard loudness meter monitoring that content, that's this upper trace, and then the lower trace here is the difference between the surround program and the same program down mixed into stereo. So when you see it going up, it means the down mixed version was louder. When you see it below the line, it means the down mixed version was softer. And I picked two points on the time graph here, H and L, I've got them marked. And then I show you what those look like, the way they're made up. So here's a screenshot of our meter measuring these. And you can see when it down mixed to be high, the front channels all had content in them and they were correlated. It was her singing, the vocalist singing in all three front channels. The surround channels were basically audience noise. And so here our meter shows a downmix differential, significant downmix differential of the downmix being louder than the surround version. So. And here's overall surround loudness meter, here's a downmix loudness meter, and then as I mentioned, we put a copy of the downmix loudness onto the surround loudness meter. So viewing one meter, you can see that differential. And we have it set up, you can do alarming on this, so if you have this kind of a situation come up, it can alarm it for you and tell you that it's happening. And here's the inverse, here's the point L on that graph, and you can see over here that we're getting the downmix being softer than the surround version. And you can see, again, in this case, the dominant content is in the surround channels. And in this being a live performance, it's a situation where the, excuse me, the audience during that portion of it was a significant contributor to what the overall level was. Now, dialogue balance is something that comes up quite often in sports mixes, game shows, and I mentioned at the beginning, it's a measurement of the dialogue relative to everything else. If you're a mix engineer doing a mix of a basketball game, something like that, you're in a remote truck doing a basketball game, you need to be conscious of when the crowd cheers. If somebody scores a basket, crowd goes berserk, starts screaming. If you're not careful, your announcer won't be able to be heard over that crowd noise. But on the other hand, if you mix the announcer too hot relative to the crowd noise, you don't get that sense of envelopment of being at the game, of having the crowd around you. So the mix engineer is constantly monitoring the relative loudness of the announcer and the crowd, trying to get a good balance of one against the other. And quite often, networks that are broadcasting a sporting event will have a rule that says you can never let your center front dialogue drop more than anything less than 3 dB above your left and right front levels, or anything less than 6 dB above your left and right front levels. Depends on which network you're mixing for. But they typically have that minimum level difference, and that's usually done off of the meters on the console, because that's what's in front of the guy doing the mix. But that means that the guy doing the mix has to track these 3 meters, do a mental subtraction, and it also ignores what's going on in the surrounds. So what we do as a solution to that is we monitor the loudness of the dialogue, we measure it, and then we compare that loudness to the loudness of the other pieces of the content. So you get a display of the loudness of dialogue relative to the loudness of everything else, and you know immediately if you've got a problem with whether that dialogue is going to be intelligible. So a single meter lets you monitor it easily and also lets you put an alarm on it. So here's a block diagram of what I just described. So it's straightforward enough. We do a measurement of the loudness on the center front. We do a measurement of the loudness on the other four channels after being downmixed to stereo. So it's representative of what somebody would hear in a stereo presentation at home, because that's your worst case environment. If you're monitoring, if you're listening to a game in surround, you've got the advantage that the crowd noise is coming from behind you or around you, and your ears can separate out, by the cocktail party effect, the announcer in the center front from everything else in the mix. When it's down mixed to stereo, you don't have that advantage. Now your crowd noise is coming from the same speakers that your announcer is coming from. And you don't have that ability to mentally subtract out the crowd noise from the announcer. So it's much more important that you keep the ratio of the announcer's voice level to the crowd, or announcer loudness to the crowd loudness, and keep that right. So we do a down mix of the surround channels before doing that loudness measurement. So you get an assessment of how it's going to sound to the stereo viewer. And I mentioned at the beginning, another problem you have in producing surround content is potential cancellations between channels. And again, when you do this in the stereo world and you're worried about compatibility with mono, the old days, you put it on an oscilloscope, looked at the fuzzy ball, and after a while you could learn whether you're going to have a problem or not based on how the fuzzy ball looked. If it had a slope to it the right way, it was good mono content. Sloped the wrong way, you had out of phase content. And of course, if you don't monitor this, you run the risk that an actor or some critical element of your program can accidentally end up out of phase between two or more channels in the content. And when it's down mixed, that content's then going to cancel and you won't hear it. So if that happens to a critical piece of dialogue, you're in trouble. So as I mentioned, the days of the fuzzy ball, you learn what that means. This is a nice, well-enveloped surround mix because you've got a nice fuzzy ball. And if it ends up being too wide here, then you know you've got out-of-phase content. But when you go to surround, things get a lot more complicated. In the surround presentation, you've got multiple pairs of channels to deal with. So you've got a stereo pair here, here. If you had to look at a Lissajous pattern for each of those pairs, you wouldn't be able to track it all. Your brain just could not process that much information. There's no way you could interpret it and really make sense of it. And if you really want to do it right, you've also got to take into account these other channel pairs that exist. You've got a left-right front pair here that's shown in green. Then you've got these other pairs in purple. And if you have the same content in any of these pairs of channels and it's out of phase, it can cancel and you get shifts in the balance, the program balance. So it becomes a big problem in mixing for a surround mix. The more complex your mix is, the more it can become an issue. In fact, I'll give you a practical example. We had in actually, we've got it in a demo that I bring with you. I don't have a live demo functioning here, but I can show you one afterwards, where it's a show with a woman announcing to a crowd. It's a TV show where she's speaking to a crowd, and it's outdoors. So the mix was done trying to capture that outdoor sort of feeling, the crowd feeling. So that's all in surrounds. And the actor doing the announcement is wearing a lapel mic. She's got a bullhorn announcing to the crowd, but she's wearing a lapel mic so they can actually get her voice well in the mix. And then they did the mix with a boom mic overhead as well. And the boom mic is mixed into the left and right front, and the lapel mic goes into the center front. And when you hear it in surround, it sounds great. It's a very enveloping mix. And it's enveloping and it sounds great whether the overhead mic, the boom mic, is in phase with the lapel mic or not. You still get an enveloping mix that sounds great heard in surround. But if that boom mic overhead happens to be out of phase with a lapel mic and you down mix to stereo, you have a major reduction in level for that actor's voice. And she is not intelligible over the outdoor sounds, the crowd noise anymore. So if you have an accidental phase reversal in the microphone pickup, it can be a big problem, and you'll never know it if you're just monitoring in surround, monitoring audibly in surround. So again, problem of the multiple list view pattern is people have taken the approach of, okay, let's pack these all into one display. It's too many things for somebody to look at, so let's find a way to map these into one display. And there are at least a half dozen different ones of these on the market. They all differ in how many pairs they show you, or they show just that set in blue, or include the green one, or include the purple ones in their measurement. How they pack them into one picture, if they use color to do the packing, if they use a dynamic range control on the overall display so it doesn't get too small when things get soft, and where they put any other displays on the screen. So here I've got three example displays from three different vendors. The first one takes each fuzzy ball and cuts it in half and then squashes down to a pie shape. So each of these pie-shaped pieces is the list view pattern for that stereo pair between the pairwise speakers. So you've got one pie shape here, one here, one here. So they pack them into a display that way. This one uses color and then changes color based on the phase between the channels. This one builds a straight line between channels if they're correctly phased. If they're out of phase, they start bending this line in, so you get a concave side to the pentagon figure. And then they put additional displays around it to show interchannel correlations. And so it becomes a very complex display to interpret. It can tell you a lot once you learn it, but you have to spend a lot of time learning it, listening to different kinds of content. Of course, another problem with it, with all of these, is if you aren't looking at them, you don't know anything about what's going on. So the bigger problems are you're measuring phase, which isn't really what you want to know in the first place. What you want to know is how's it going to sound. The displays are subjective. You have to learn them. They're not quantitative at all. And the best meter in the world, most informative meter in the world, is useless if no one's looking at it. And typically the mix engineer has other things to do besides staring at a meter, whether it's trying to follow the directions that he's getting from the producer or she's getting from the producer, or trying to see what's going on set so they can handle their cues correctly and change faders when they're supposed to. They really don't have the time to be looking at a meter all the time. So the meter doesn't tend to get used enough to really clue you in as to what's happening. I mentioned the problem being that these things measure phase, but that's really not what you care about. What you care about is when it's down mixed, how's it going to sound? Most mix engineers really can't relate what they hear to a given phase number. So if you tell them, oh, these two channels are 45 degrees out of phase, they won't have a clue how that's going to sound. But if you tell them this channel is 4 dB lower than this other one, they'll know immediately how that's going to sound, or this piece of content is 4 dB softer than this other piece. So we set out to make something that would make real measurements in something that the mix engineer can relate to. So what we do, technique that we use, is we take the surround mix and we down mix it to stereo and mono inside the box. So we create two more streams off the original one coming in. We meter all three of these streams. So we've got level meters on the original surround channels and on the left and right stereo channel and the mono channel. We perform a 1/30th octave analysis on the original channels as well as the stereo and mono down mixes. And then we combine the spectra together using the same down mix coefficients we use to make the stereo and mono versions. So we use the set top box down mix formulas. And if you're feeding in an encoded signal, we strip the metadata out so we read what the metadata says to use for down mix coefficients. And we do that down mix. And then we do the down mix of the spectra as well. And we compare those. So we know that if everything is fine, whether you down mixed in the frequency domain or down mixed in the time domain, you'd get the same results. But because down mixing in the frequency domain doesn't take into account phase, we're just adding the powers across frequency. If you've got phase cancellations, the time domain down mix will be impacted by it, the frequency domain down mix won't. So as a result, we compare those two, and we can tell when there's been a problem in the down mix. So here's a diagram of it, make it a little easier to follow instead of my words. We start with a surround mix. We do real-time analyzer displays of them. We use a equivalent to the old LED-based RTAs. So we're looking at filters, 30th octave filters across frequency. And we do that for all five channels. We take and downmix those channels to stereo, and we measure those with the same RTA measurement. And then we downmix to mono, and we measure that with the same RTA measurement. Now we downmix the spectrum displays, and we compare the downmixed spectrum to the spectrum of the downmix. And any difference we then provide as a graph. So if you're not getting cancellations, this graph will come out at zero. So you see something like this. This is our downmix compatibility display. So at the top is a octave band spectrum display, just to give you a reference of what is in the content, how much bass, how much treble, whatever. This particular snippet happens to be a fairly bass-heavy piece of content. And we downmix it to stereo and to mono, and then we show you that difference. If there's no difference, this becomes a straight line across here at 0 dB. If there's any cancellation, then we move the icon for that octave band down. So we take the 30 bands that make up an octave, we combine the results from those, just so you're not looking at 300 moving dots. We try and reduce the information overload. So here, when you get cancellations in the right channel, you're seeing the right channel icon moving down. Here's a left channel icon, there's a right channel icon, here's a mono icon. So it tells you that you've got cancellations in mono at the 500 hertz point here that are only a couple dB, but you've got cancellations in stereo on the right channel that are 15 dB in the voice band. So this says that voice band content in this range is canceling. There's a voice band here, it's canceling by a significant amount, which means that voice is going to be seriously impaired. That actor's dialogue is going to be seriously impaired. We also, I haven't talked about it, I won't get into it here, but we do a similar measurement on the LFE to see if there's anything common between the LFE and the surround channels that's going to cancel when that's downmixed, if you're going to have any issues in the LFE. So this is a typical live mix application. It's used on Sunday morning football in one of the major networks. They've got our displays up on a monitor up above the mixing console, and they can see at a glance what's going on. But what's more important is, because all these things can be alarmed, we can set it up that this previous display, you never have to look at it to know that things have gone wrong. You can set up a threshold that says, if I ever get downmix errors worse than 6 dB and they occur for more than 1 second at a time, then sound an alarm, let me know about it. So the mix engineer can go about performing the mix, doing the work that they're supposed to be doing, and not even look at this display. When something is wrong, then a light can light up on the console, or a beep can happen, and then they can look at this display and get more details as to what went wrong. But if nothing's wrong, they don't have to look at the display. So the mix engineer doing this this fine-tuning work, they've got a mixer in the truck, and then they've got one in the facility in LA where this comes in from the truck, and that mix engineer in the facility in LA has this as a reference. They can see the channel balance around them. They know immediately what the loudness of all the signals around them is relative to one another. They can see the loudness issues overall because the loudness meters, and they can see the downmix compatibility, and they can see the dialogue balance. This is a typical ingest application where all the content coming in is run through one of seven, I believe, ingest suites, where they've got a human being looking at it for problems in the video. Human being also listens for profanity or other issues like that, but they don't have to worry about the downmix issues. They don't have to worry about loudness issues. That's all done automatically by the equipment. So our equipment sits in a rack here and is displayed up on this monitor for them to look at if they need to. And all the data saved, because we log everything we do, so they have that to refer to later if something goes wrong, or at the end of the ingest session, they can review the log and see what went on. You can find a lot more information about the details of this on our website. We've got copies of quite a few different tech notes, on what we do, user manual. We've got FCC documents up there. So it's a good resource. I'll refer to some other papers that are available online. There's one that Bruce Jacobs did, and he's with Milwaukee Public Broadcasting at HPA back in 2012, talks about the whole issue of downmix loudness compared to surround loudness. It's a very well-done paper. And then same topic covered by the two folks I mentioned that were at CBC. They're not anymore. Scott went to Dolby a few months back. I think Michael's still there. But they looked at the effect of downmixing on loudness, and they did that measurement on many hundreds of pieces of content. And I mentioned some of the practical issues that this brings up. There are issues, let me back up here. Gaming the system, I left this at the end because I wasn't sure if I'd have time to cover it, but I have a minute or two left here. I mentioned the unscrupulous advertiser who might be inclined to game the system. And what's involved there is if you want your commercial to sound louder in stereo, people are hearing it in stereo, all you have to do is put the same content in all your surround channels. And if your center front level is zero, so you're putting an announcer in the center front hawking your detergent or whatever it is, you put that same exact feed into your left and right front, attenuated 3 dB, put that same feed in your two surround speakers, attenuated 9 dB, and then for the default 3 dB downmix coefficients that are what virtually everybody uses, you will get a 3.8 loudness unit increase in the stereo version. So if you do that to your commercial, it's going to be almost 4 dB louder than what it's been leveled to if it's leveled in surround. So if it's leveled by a broadcaster to minus 24, when it's heard by somebody in stereo, it's going to be effectively a minus 20. It's going to come out a lot louder. There's a push to use what Dolby refers to as dialogue intelligence, which is a scheme where they only measure the levels during dialogue. But because of the way it's done, it has its own weaknesses, and somebody who's out to game the system can add other sounds to disable the dialogue recognition, because the dialogue recognition depends upon balancing of various things in the mix to determine whether it's dialogue or not. So by putting other sounds in, you can fool the dialogue intelligence detection. And also dialogue intelligence, the way it's promulgated by Dolby, doesn't measure the surrounds. So whatever you put in the surrounds will end up coming through for free, so you can boost your overall levels by putting content specifically into the surrounds, which then when it's downmixed to stereo will come out too hot. So I've got a couple minutes for questions. Any questions? No? Okay, thanks very much for your attention.